It is not uncommon to hear people talk about being cultural Christians. They're acknowledging that there is something Christian-ish about them, but don't mistake them for strong adherents of the faith. These are not what you might call committed Christians. The scholar of comparative religion, Winston Smith, was once asked why, after he had studied the great religions of the world and incorporated into his own life many of the spiritual understandings and practices he had encountered, why he still referred to himself as a Methodist. He replied, without skipping a beat, "Ancestor worship." He'd been born into the Methodist tradition, and he continued to claim it long after it had ceased to have any claim on him. This is true in all religions, of course. There are cultural Jews and Buddhists and Hindus and, for that matter, atheists. People for whom their relationship with the spiritual religious tradition that they claim has little or no claim on them. People who we might say are casual in their religious affiliation. Leah, our director of faith development, and I once ran a two-day training for staff teams, ordained ministers, and the religious professionals they worked with. One of the exercises that we borrowed from somewhere began with participants calling out things that the congregations they served did that they were proud of. Our monthly food pantry, someone said. Our collaboration with other faith communities to provide housing for the homeless during the coldest months of the year, said another. The work we do to keep the vision of the United Nations alive in the minds of our congregation. Our ministry with, for, and by young adults. Someone said, our religious education programming, and someone else then quickly added, especially for our youth. Meaningful worship. That one came from one of the ordained clergy people. Our covenant groups that bring small groups of people together in powerful ways. Our movement, our support of the movement for Black Lives, having become a green sanctuary, having become a welcoming congregation. Our program to bring food to members of the congregation who are sick. Our practice of raising money for nonprofits each month who are doing meaningful work in our wider community. I could certainly go on. They certainly did. As I said, they had no problem listing program after program, project after project, activity after activity, one after another, of which they were proud. The list I just read, by the way, didn't come from my notes after that weekend. They're all things we do here, about which I'm really proud. Like I said, this group had no problem coming up with a long list of things the congregations they served were doing that were making a difference in the lives of their members and their wider communities. It was the second part of the exercise that gave them some problems. Participants were asked to read together from that list each item beginning with the words, "We do," and ending with the words, "because we are Unitarian Universalists." We have a monthly food pantry because we are Unitarian Universalists. We collaborate with other faith communities to provide housing for the homeless during the coldest months of the year because we are Unitarian Universalists. We have a ministry for, with, and by young adults because we're Unitarian Universalists. We bring food to members of the congregations who are sick because we're Unitarian Universalists. We became a green sanctuary and a welcoming congregation because we are Unitarian Universalists. Not everyone had a hard time with this, but a lot of people there found it really hard to say that the things they and the congregations they served did, the good and important things they did, the things about which they could be proud, they did because They were Unitarian Universalists. They would have felt comfortable saying that they did it because they were good-hearted people, because they cared about each other and the world, because they were the right things to do. But to say that they did them because of being Unitarian Universalists, because our faith tradition compelled them to, because as Unitarian Universalists, they felt a mandate to make the world a better place, well, a lot of folks who were there weren't comfortable saying that. And these were religious professionals, one and all. Last week, during the annual questions and responses service, I was asked what I found most frustrating about Unitarian Universalism, and by extension, I'd think about Unitarian Universalists. Well, in addition to the things I'd mentioned then, I'd add this. The number of people who are, for lack of a better phrase, cultural or casual UUs. Oh, we're good-hearted people just as are most cultural Christians. If asked, we will claim our connection to Unitarian Universalism, yet if we're really being honest about it, it has little or no claim on us. It isn't truly part of our identity, our core identity, our fundamental identity. It's what we do on Sunday mornings and perhaps a few other times during the week, but it's not really who we are. And I find that frustrating and more than a little sad, frankly, because our Unitarian Universalist faith is something. Our tradition has a history and an identity and a power that is different than the history, identity, and power of other religious traditions or civic groups. Not better, but different, unique, ours. Unitarian Universalism is more than, as one joke at our expense puts it, halfway between Methodists and the golf course. Yet, when we don't feel, don't know ourselves to be part of something larger than ourselves, larger than the congregation we happen to go to when we think there'll be something interesting to us happening there, it is so easy to become really focused on our own congregation and what's happening there right now. This is true in and about Unitarian Universalist congregations wherever we have set up shop, and whatever is or that we might think isn't happening in them in any particular moment, and how we feel about that. When we become so isolated and so insular, we cut ourselves off from the power of our association, and I'm not talking about our institutional association, but the reality that our congregations are associated with one another, connected with one another, can draw strength from and offer support to one another. When we lose sight of the fact that we are part of something larger than merely the group of people who gather at 717 Rugby Road in Charlottesville, or 351 Boylston Street in Boston, or 2952 South Peoria Avenue in Tulsa, or online through the Church of the Larger Fellowship, when we lose sight of the fact that we are more than any of those, then we also all too often lose sight of the fact that we are part of an association of several hundred thousand people and over 16,000 congregations and a faith that in the United States can trace its roots back to the foundation of the Universalist Church of America in 1793. Our Unitarian Universalist Association is something. And we lose something When we don't fully recognize, acknowledge, or own that as part of who we are, we lose something. And our congregations and our wider association loses much when we are just merely cultural UUs or casual about our Unitarian Universalism. In that sermon that I keep coming back to, Susan said this, "Friends, this is no time to go it alone. We, as Unitarian Universalists, can't go it alone. We, as individual congregations, cannot be alone in this struggle. The time we are living in is one of tremendous opportunity and needed change. And the health and strength of our communities and our commitment to our values, to this theology of love and interdependence, is crucial." She also said, "This is no time for a casual faith." That's a line she says over and over and over again. This is no time for a casual faith. As Unitarian Universalists, she continues in this sermon, we are first and foremost religious communities. Religious communities that practice love as our foundation. And we are living in times of heartbreak, violence, struggle, and pain. In this time, we need communities that remind us of our humanity in this very inhumane time. And these are very inhumane times. Hate crimes more than doubled the day after the 2016 election, with a 92% spike in average daily hate crimes in the 2 weeks following the election compared to the daily average from the beginning of the year. Crimes against Latinos increased by the greatest percent, followed by Muslims and Arabs and African Americans. And I quote all that from an article co-authored by the director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University in San Bernardino. These are very inhumane times. This past Thursday, the Justice Department issued a legal brief arguing that federal civil rights law does not ban discrimination on the grounds of sexual orientation, does not ban it. In April, the administration rewrote a rule that had barred discrimination in healthcare due to gender identity, and they rescinded that language. And the State Department has reportedly been retroactively revoking passports for transgender women, forcing them to prove their identity. These are inhumane times. Some in the EPA have come out and said that under Trump, their mission is changing from protecting human health and the environment to protecting industry. All that, and I haven't mentioned that according to U.S. District Judge Dana Sabro, the administration is responsible for losing several hundred parents of the more than 2,700 children forcibly separated at the U.S. border since October of last year. Nor that, as a recent article in New York Magazine put it, it seems increasingly plausible that the President of the United States has been a Russian asset since 1987. Powerful article. These are inhumane times indeed, frightening times, dangerous times, and times that call on us to work perhaps harder than we've ever worked before to both stem and then reverse the rising tide of hatred and intolerance. And these are times that call on us to do this work because, as Unitarian Universalists, we have something rare and unique to offer this work. We know more about interfaith collaboration than just about anyone, because every Sunday morning in every one of our sanctuaries, we hold interfaith services. We bring something to that conversation that is needed. We know more about being a faith community rooted in social justice, because that has been a core identity of our Unitarian Universalist tradition, and before that merger in 61 of both the Universalist and Unitarian traditions, justice at its core. We bring to the table something unique that only we bring to the table. And yet, if we congregations and individuals around the country, if we forget that we are part of such a tradition, if we think we are just members of one community with its ins and outs, and forget that we are part of something larger, we will not bring that unique thing. And not only will we as individuals and we as congregations and we as an association lose something, our world will lose something that it so desperately needs. I want to close with a reading that's in the back of our hymnal. Words from Olympia Brown, who is the first woman ordained in the United States with the full backing and support of religious denomination, the Universalists. And she said this: "Stand by this faith, work for it, and sacrifice for it. There is nothing more important in all the world as to be loyal to this faith, which has placed before us the loftiest of ideals, which has comforted us in sorrow, strengthened us for noble duty, and made the world beautiful. Do not demand immediate results, but rejoice that we are worthy to be entrusted with this great message, that you are strong enough to work for a great, true principle without counting the cost. Stand by this faith, work for it, and sacrifice for it. It is something worth that."